Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Thank you.
time to get down with the chefs for 2+ hours of good food for thought.
Courtesy of your loving mad scientist here at Soul Radio. Sleeping me on Thomas.
In the wrong. I'm your host, Michael Lewis, singer, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you in the house. Soul Tree Raven in the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassin, the Black Athlete Sports Network. You can get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network. Chiming in from where they come from, Reggie from Richmond, Virginia, D'Orlando Ledbetter and Cheryl Jones from Philadelphia, Ricky Hampton Sr. from Detroit City, Mike Roberson from Oakland, California, Pat Freeman, the Mighty Oba, fresh from his success off his first book, The Art of the Interview. We hope to speak with Oba soon in Western New York, and, of course, the rest of our crew among them. My man, Gary Norris Gray, who is indisposed at the moment. But just to give you guys a little rundown of what we'll find on the show tonight, I want to make 2 points regarding our conversation over the course of the evening. We have a guest at 9:30. But we want to recognize the fact that marvelous Marvin Hagler is no more with us. But in celluloid, he will be forever entrenched as a participant in probably the greatest 3 minutes of boxing these eyes have ever seen. In addition, we want to make the case for Gil Hodges, a good player, a good man, and I don't know who the fuck he pissed off when it came to the Hall of Fame, because he should have been in a long time ago.
So, he bit everybody when he won the World Series.
Yeah, he did. He did, G. But you know what? This goes right to the heart of what Terrell Owens talked about. Now, maybe he didn't do it to some people's liking, but he told the truth. The Halls of Fame are full of shit. And I don't just mean sports. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is full of shit. You know, we've had many conversations about that. And
I know.
Well, but we want to revisit that aspect, those aspects of it tonight, because it's long overdue. Any hall has no credibility when it leaves capable people out. And I don't hear this shit about the Hall of Very Good and all this other crap. You know, if they want to consider societal factors, then they need to consider all the mitigating factors that are in play when somebody is up for a so-called Hall of Fame. You know what I mean?
Michael, I've said this 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
It's who is telling the story. Mm. That's why you get the Hall of Fame. Now, in my book, Cut Blood, and no question about it, to be Hall of Fame.
That's
but
the
man at Cut Blood, why? Because he broke the free agency, and it's still bad, 35, 40 years ago.
They're mad at Kurt Flood because he made everybody, black, white, whatever, a lot of green. And they didn't want to hear that shit. So it makes you wonder how their overhead, their business costs, how low they were before players had the right to have people operate on their behalf and negotiate as much money as the market will allow. You know, they had to be getting off seriously. I bring this up because a couple of nights ago, I was watching the movie 61, which is one of my favorite sports movies. This was the movie about the race between Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle to pass Babe Ruth's home run record, as my man said in the movie, the fat fuck. But, of course, because Roger was one that the writers didn't like, they deliberately went on a campaign to smear his ass. And, of course, in the end, it didn't change, but it showed you, even back then in the early 60s, how politics affected how athletes were treated. And this is no different. What was done to Gil Hodges, unless he has photos of some of these motherfuckers voting, doing dirty deeds with sheep, I don't understand why they got a beef with this guy.
No, I'm telling you, Mike. Look, 1989, think about this.
Mm-hmm.
You remember being in St. Louis, Colorado, right?
Right.
You remember being the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
You remember being the Baltimore Orioles, the three most powerful teams in baseball.
They sure did.
Okay. They're mad because they did it.
Oh, yeah. I can dig that, G. But as my man Tony McClain is coming into the house, and Tony, you've been passionate about this as well. You know, who the fuck did Gil Hodges piss off for him to be shut out in such a manner?
And Dave Parker and Keith Hernandez and, who else? Al Oliver, you know.
Yeah.
Baseball, I attribute it to baseball's arrogance, but also more so with Hodges. He may be the biggest victim of analytics. I'm sorry,
yes.
Analytics. Because
mm-hmm.
literally there is no one left around who covered the Boys of Summer. There's very, very few.
Very few. Yeah.
Vince Scully is probably, he may be like the last guy that actually physically saw the Boys of Summer as a media person. And, you know, and Vince is like, how old is Vince? 2,000 to 2,500? I forget. He's up
something
there.
Something like that.
He's, you know. All kidding aside, he's in his 90s, I think. But he's. I think especially now, when you hear more talk of Scott Rolen getting in than Gil Hodges.
Oh, hell yeah!
Oh man!
And again, for all the Scott Rolen, groupies, I'm not trying to. I use him as an example because I think, especially with baseball, a lot of those
mm-hmm.
guys in that like late 50s, early 70s,
yeah.
they're going to get analyticked out. And I think baseball, it's already hurt baseball wise. I think it's hurt the most in baseball. You see it a little bit. You see it in football as well, and even to a certain extent, basketball, because there's still a lot of guys that you say to yourself, because, the next person that says it's the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Good, I'm going to give them a haul of my foot up their ass, because somewhere along the way, especially baseball, they've gotten so arrogant in regards to who should get in, who shouldn't get in. Now, a lot of people go out of their way to go after Harold Baines. And I'm gonna tell you, you got people that want to call him a compiler and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you had folks saying that same thing about Hank Aaron. Now, truth be told, I think there's a racial component to it. As well, I think also when you had the year where they voted on, I guess it was like about 15 or 16 Negro Leaguers that got in all in one. They left out Buck O'Neill, but that's another 2-hour story in and of itself. But let's face it, from about 75, maybe even from 72 when Satch got in and beyond,
mm-hmm.
you had a lot of the great black stars, not necessarily Negro Leaguers, but a lot of black stars get in. And I do think at some point there was, you know, hey, there was a white backlash. I think it was like, there's too many of these black folks getting in. And you know, now they weren't saying, you know, want to take back my, I want to, you know, they want to take back the Hall of Fame, so to speak. But they've spoken by their voting or non-voting of certain players. And when certain players have gotten in, they've like, you know, because again, and you know, I might just come on and say again, when people are pushing Scott Rowland, and there are so many other guys that, you know, that I say to myself, why? Now, also with Hodges, you know, we talked about this, the Pittsburgh Steeler, Dallas Cowboy factor in the Football Hall of Fame. I do get the feeling that the Brooklyn Dodgers and maybe the Dodgers franchise as a whole may be going through that because another Hall of Fame. Well, but see, my thinking is, if they're great players, why should it matter where? Because see, again, it's there's so many stipulate. You know, it's almost like as the years have gone on, they've tried to make it even harder to get in.
Yeah.
You know,
can't, but they have. And that's part of the problem. That speaks to exactly what we've been talking about because they've put politics in the mix of all of this. You know, they've said, well, this guy is okay, but, no, fuck the but. This got nothing to do with it.
The
intangibles that they always talk about how much they love in white athletes, and we do mean white athletes, are the things that are missing in the argument regarding Hodges. Was he a leader? Yes. Did he perform in pressure situations? Yes. Was he steady on and off the field if we have to go to that moral route? Yes. Now, again, unless dirty deeds have been done with sheep, there's no real reason to X him out of the argument to the Hall of Fame.
It's not like he was a malcontent. As a Met fan also, I think, again, if he had lived longer, I think he would have become a Hall of Fame. I think he would have gotten in as a Hall of Fame manager. Now, yes, I'm biased, of course. But I think I've always felt if Gil Hodges had lived a few more years, I think the Mets would have maybe won at least one more World Series. And that would have been sort of a tipping point because, see, you got to remember, the 73 team, you know, Gil unfortunately passed away days before the start of the 72 season. If not for injuries, they might have gotten back into the playoff that year. Now, of course, they wind up, you know, getting to the World Series and pushing the A's in 73. But, you know, a lot of that team from 73 was still a lot of the guys from 69. You know, for every John
That's
Milner
true.
And for every John Milner or Felix Mian, you still had a Wayne Garrett, and of course, you know, you still had Seaver and Kuzman. Now of course, Gentry was gone. Nolan Ryan got traded for some moldy bags of cream of wheat and Jim Fregosi. I'm by it. And see, and it's funny, I was having an argument, not so much an argument, but like there's an actual site on Facebook, put Gil Hodges in the Hall of Fame. And the thing I was saying was basically Gil Hodges is Keith Hernandez with more power.
Yeah, you can make that argument. Yeah,
because see, people, you know, people took for granted his defense. Now, there's a snap. Now, ironically, you know, we were talking about, you know, too many Dodgers, so to speak. There's been a little bit of a groundswell for Steve Garvey to get in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once
probably
you get
because
past
Kathy Garvey, but I digress.
Now, once you get past sort of the phony persona, he did put together some pretty decent numbers, and also that infield that was basically there from the Stone Age through forever. You know, again, they may not be quote unquote Hall of Famers, but see, we can go on and on because how do you put Tram? How do you put Alan Trammell in and not Lou Whitaker?
And Matt Whitaker, yes, exactly.
You know? I mean, we could just talk Hall of Fames till the cows come home, and it's hard to say. Yeah, I know. LeBron's got enough.
He's a Met fan. Yeah.
But the thing is, there are so many. I've been saying this, you know, for how long have you guys known me? All the four major Hall of Fames, I believe there's 5 to 10 players from each decade going back to like the 40s or 50s, where you say to yourself, why isn't this so-and-so not in?
You're right.
And it's hard to say which one is more egregious because, when I was younger, I didn't know as much. I got caught up in the numbers. And, see, it was a lot simpler time. 500 home runs, 3,000 hits, 300 wins, X amount of Super Bowl, victories, X amount of MVPs, but see now with analytics and the human analytics of some of these writers. See, I don't know if it would change anything, but the one thing, if I'm the commissioner of any sport, one of my first acts. All living Hall of Famers vote on the Hall of Fame.
Yes. Yes.
To me, that should be mandatory. Because
I agree.
They've known
all the
because
be defamed.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you see, as much as some of our brethren may know about stuff, I'm going to listen to somebody that's been in between the white lines or has been, on the firing line or what have you, okay. I'll come right. I'll say it. Yeah. Some of them may have their own prejudices and whatever too, but you know what? Who am I going to believe? A penis envy sports writer or a guy that's actually played the game?
There you go. And there's a big difference between the hard-on that some of these writers get when they know they are short-shrifting the players who earn the right to be looked at, but looked at just from one play alone. You can see in football how racist the approach is. And I'm talking about the Hail Mary pass. Okay. Dallas Vikings. 5 seconds left. Starback throws that shit up. Here's Drew Pearson, who not only is clever enough to run the pattern clean, but to come down and give himself just enough wiggle room to judge where he is to the end zone and thwart Nate Wright from simply making a play.
I was about to say, Nate Wright may have something to say about that.
That's right. Well, see, but that's my point. Nate Wright, we know, messed up. He blew the opportunity. If Nate Wright tackles improperly, the game is over because Pearson's tackled on the 2-yard line. But Pearson is never given credit for what he did, running the pattern and setting up for the place that he could get to the end zone. Everybody just screams, oh, Roger, look how great he is. That's bullshit. The throw is nothing without the catch. Mm-hmm. And if Pearson doesn't do exactly what he did, Dallas comes up short, Minnesota wins the fucking game, and we move on from there. And I'm bringing this up only because when the NFL celebrated its 100th year and decided to take a shitload of players in one huge class, Pearson was left off. Now, you can always make an argument about player A as opposed to player B, but Drew Pearson, in my eyes, is a Hall of Famer. He has the stats. He has the play. He has the play on the pressure. He did everything he could possibly do to help his team win.
And thank goodness that right has been wronged now, finally.
He's in?
Didn't you see?
Well, really, you know what? I had definitely a duh moment because I really thought he did not after he got.
No, he finally, matter of fact, it's one of the more moving, I forget the guy's name. I guess he's one of the Hall of Famers, and he basically looks like Jonathan Winters with a very dark wig, but he basically showed up, I guess, at Pearson's place, and Pearson broke down. It was really kind of nice to see. It was really, really kind of nice to see because I think all of us, whether we're Cowboy fans or not, realize what this meant to him because, you know, he took it personal. He definitely took it personal. And it was great to see. I mean, yeah, and see, some, you know, and again, for all the whatever we give them, there are times where they get it right. But for every Drew Pearson, there's a Cliff Branch. You know, for every T.O., there's a Jim Marshall. I mean, we can, you know, again, prevalent in all of, and I'm going to go out on a limb, and I think because of its arrogance, I think baseball may be the most egregious. I could be wrong. You know, I don't know if you guys feel the same. It's hard to see, but see, you got just as many, you know, there's just as many in football, though, too. That's the only thing.
Well,
you got a lot of guys in football that you say to yourself, why isn't this guy in? Now, baseball, maybe because of the whole national pastime and how they still, you know, don't think their shit stinks. Maybe that's why it means. And plus, they've had multiple years where they didn't vote anyone in. I mean, say what you want about the other three. They get folks in every year. Baseball, I mean, it's happened at least three times in the last 20 years, they didn't vote anybody in. And to me, that, again, it speaks more of these writers than it does the actual players who are eligible for the Hall of Fame. Because, look.
Well, gentlemen, you have two writers out here in California who have publicly stated that they would never, ever vote for the Barry LaVar Bond. Now, in my opinion, those two writers have no right to vote for the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
They should be banned for voting for the Hall of Fame.
You're right, because they expose their own prejudices. If you're working as a writer and your part is to judge, I'm sorry, T, your job is to be objective.
Mm-hmm.
You may not like somebody as much as another guy, but is the person doing what they're supposed to do? Are they playing well? Are they playing under pressure? When they go up against peers, do they overcome? Are they better? That's what you're supposed to, you're supposed to ascertain all of that.
Yeah. And we've talked several times about the whole Marty Noble, Roberto Alomar thing. I mean, to me, his vote should be taken, and he should be getting a public ass whooping on cable TV. But that's Tony, just me.
Before we introduce our guest, Tony, can you please tell everybody about the Marty Noble situation with Roberto Alomar?
Marty Noble, longtime writer for New York Newsday and other various places, Let's Speak writer for years. When Roberto Alomar first year of Bellator came up, of course, there was the whole controversy of him and John Hirschbeck, the spitting incident. Now, Alomar and Hirschbeck basically, you know, have formed, you know, a friendship and all this other stuff over the years. And, you know, he apologized. And Marty Noble says, well, I wasn't going to vote for him because of the whole spitting incident. And the person on TV he was being interviewed by said, well, you know, he did apologize for that. He said, well, he didn't apologize to me. And to me, I'm like, really? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Arrogant son of a bitch.
Now, I will say this, forgive me. A lot of those guys are literally and figuratively dying out. They'll be around, but see, you're starting to see more of the analytics crowd. You know, the Brian Kenny of the world. Yeah. And so Nakasim, you know, tragically, somebody like Dick Allen didn't live long enough to see himself get in.
Exactly.
And it's a shame. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all sorts of, you know, like, you know, Buck O'Neill, of course, is a perfect example as well. But
exactly. But
that's the thing, because what's bothersome now is that the first thing out of folks' mouth, well, he's not a Hall of Famer. And? So because he's not a Hall of Famer, his career is shit, basically.
Mm-hmm. And these are usually the people don't know feather nor fig about the supposed theater expertise they're supposed to be speaking on. I want to get to our guest as we speak right now. He is a life skills coach with Lincoln Schools and Community and a former AD at Virginia Union. Brother Michael Bailey is on the line. Coach, are you there?
Hey, guys. Yes, I am. How are you?
Hey, Coach.
I am good, sir.
Good. Can you hear me pretty good?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can.
But
I want you to throw something in the pot on what we were talking about just a couple of seconds ago. You know, the halls of fame are so loaded with politics that they defeat the purpose of why they're there. You know, their job is to be objective about who deserves to be in there. And, of course, that objectivity has been taken away a long time ago.
Yeah. Hey, man, anytime you mix athletes, people, and politics, hey, man, nobody's going to be happy. That athletic arena is just very different from how people in the bleachers think. And unless you've been at that level – and competed at that high level, you're not going to get it. So that's my take on that, man. That's my opinion. But as far as the Hall of Fame, it's politics in it like everything else. But at the end of the day, I don't worry about the Hall of Fame. I'm more concerned about the people that are in the Hall of Shame.
I hear you. Tell us a bit more about what you do, Coach, for a living.
Hey, man, make a long story short, I help people from K through however far you're going to go. I'm a service person. That's where it is. That's where it starts, and that's where it ends. But what I'm doing right now, I'm fighting hard to do my best to link communities and schools through life skills coaching and teaching more so than a lot of speaking, man. So that's kind of where I am. We just got to realize where we are in 2021. We behind – I'd be nice to say if I say we were behind the eight ball, but I don't know what kind of ball we are behind. But we're behind, man, and we got to really move towards more positive thinking and more teaching, more so than speaking to our youth. That's where I stand.
Before I pass this on to the rest of the panel, how much has the conditions affected your ability to help supplement those in the teaching process? You know, the disease, the pandemic, all of this has thrown chaos into some of this, and there were some conditions that weren't all that great to begin with. How have you been able to negotiate through all this?
By learning something new every day, of being flexible and being positive. There's no set remedy to this. Even the professionals, man, the people that have been invested in this all their life with regard to the Center for Disease Control. Man, tomorrow morning they're going to tell us something new. So for me, I have to position myself for continuous learning, and that's what everybody should do. But it has impacted my program. It has impacted the schools in a major way. Teachers' lives, students, parents. We're not really putting out a realistic picture of some of the horror stories that are out there, man. We got people quitting. And when you quit, you know the game is over. So
yeah.
Make a long story short, you know, I just really feel like, man, it was an awakening. You know, the George Floyd piece is an awakening call and cry.
Yeah.
And, you know, we act like, really, man, like that's something that's going to go away. And this is where I kick in. You guys, we're talking about reopening in schools. I wanted to make sure people know what we're getting ready to reopen to.
Yeah.
You got some young people that are going to come back into these schools with a whole different frame of mindset. And then, you know, everybody's talking about opening in schools. There's a population of kids. There's a population of kids that hate school, and they got to go back to the building. So, come on, man. But that's where I come from, and you can see where I am with that. So, to make a long story short, that's about as negative as it can be. But my frame of mind pre-COVID was that we have to think positive as a community and a school in order to build. And until we realize that, man, we're going to continue to watch this news, and the news is going to be entertainment to you guys and everybody else more so than a building block to improve. One thing we in this country and around the world, how people look at us, man, we're a big party over here. And then we tell on ourselves. We think everything is entertainment. I'm not entertained easily. And when you're talking about youth and kids, And long-term goals and accountability, I'm the last one you want to run into. That's just where I am with that.
All right. We want to open the floor. Tell you, Michael Bailey, life skills coach at the podium, we have a question for him.
Yeah. Specifically, what has been the bigger changes for you in regards to COVID, in regards to what you do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
The biggest change is engagement with students and teachers. And
or lack thereof as well, or lack thereof?
It was shut down, and it's still not open. I don't know when we're going to get back to when you can hug 60 kids coming past you.
Yeah.
That's done right now. You know, so, you know, every morning when I'm in the schools, man, I'm getting 100 hugs. And so they're hugging administrators and teachers for a reason, man, because that's probably the only hug they're going to get that day. So the biggest change was the complete shutdown. We got kids all across the nation, all across the world. They're not getting that hug. Anybody ever think about that?
Mm-hmm.
So you got kids quitting, and we have to reopen with a proactive strategy. And the leaders that are in position to do something and act now, they're just in the bleachers, if you ask me, man. I don't think they're used to competing at the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
And when you compete at the highest level, you're not afraid of challenges. Every day is a challenge. But when you're working with little people, man, K through whatever, You gotta position yourself, man, to be coachable as an adult and to be inspirational and realize that your service is education. So school for me right now, when schools open back up, who wants to really hear about social studies after watching George Floyd, man?
And also, Mr. Bailey, now for the ones who, quote-unquote, may not be looking forward to going back to school, but what about the ones who, where they may have been, you know, the home may have not have been a great place for them because of what was going on in the family, and school was their refuge. How are they going to be able to, if you had to talk to them, how would you say for them to cope? And then if and when we get back to whatever the hell normal is, where do we go? Where do we go from that? I know it's sort of a long-winded question, but I just, you know, just wanted to get an idea.
I got a complete understanding of what your question is. And you said, how do I or how can I? I talk to kids weekly. I have a group of kids that they chime in on the virtual at 8:30 in the morning on Monday mornings, and they've been consistent. I'm so proud of them because they're reaching out, and they have I set them off on a good pace for a week. So this is my story. You have to teach, reteach, and reinforce. And you have to position little people so that they can be coachable. How's that going to happen? It's called relationship building. So when you build a relationship with a young person, they're not going to let you down, and they will develop a sense of trust with you. So now that they trust you, when the red alerts come like COVID, when the red alert comes like a fight or an argument, or they may be being abused, they may be coming from rough scenarios, when you build the relationship with them, it's easy to help them. Mm-hmm. See, we keep trying to help people, and we don't have a relationship with them, so which means that, number one, they're not going to open up because they don't, you know, the middle school kid right now is an adult. Like when I was in middle school, it was probably real middle school. Mm-hmm. But the middle schools now, hey, guys, everything you can reach on an internet, that's what you're going to find in the middle school, okay? Yeah. Keep it 100 or you keep it 100 or get me off of this call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a whole different world from when we were in school back in the Stone Ages when Fred and Barney inherited the earth.
Yeah. But I tell you what's not different is care
mm-hmm.
and accountability. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you come off of that, you know, that's kind of where we are. So this mm-hmm. is, you know, again, man, this is something that has to be really looked at on a global scale. When you're talking about working in low-income communities, economically disadvantaged communities and kids, it's about as serious as it can get. And what kills me is that sometimes, you know, I just don't like the momentum of people that have the power. It's like they don't see it, like it's like it's not here. But at the end of the day, man, they're going to be held accountable for that. So I feel good when I get up in the morning. I know I'm being of service, but go back to flipping anything that you run into negative. You got to flip it into a positive and act now.
Yep. Thank you, sir.
Yep. I agree. Gary, do you have any questions for Bailey?
Well, in the year 2025, there will be more minority disabled people than white disabled people. How do you deal with students with disability?
I was just talking about that to one of my neighbors. A student with disabilities have even more positive abilities than some of us that don't wear that title. So you flip a negative to a positive. A disability is not necessarily a negative. It's a challenge.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
those people have needs too. But I guarantee you one thing, they also have some skills that we don't have. So we build on that. We build on the positive. I've worked with students in that arena. So I've had one kid was so smart, man, he could grade a lot of papers faster than me. You think I didn't let him do it? Okay,
no,
so
I
think,
that's
my question.
I graduated high school. There were only 5 colleges accepted disabled students.
Right.
Now, 2021, there are 3,000 schools. So we go a long way.
That's right. That's right. But again, just a better a way to describe that community, they're very exceptional. Okay, so that's why that area of exceptional education is, you know, it's just a very positive piece and a positive way to look at being of service to others. All right?
Thank you, sir.
Good job.
Professor okay. Fred, do you have any questions for Brother Bailey?
Yeah. Do you see a place for, or how do you use history in the, instruction and informing and molding the young people that you deal with?
Once I get them to be coachable, and believe me, that's the struggle right now with regard to the outreach. You know, you got to get them to be coachable, which means you got to put them in position where they will intake, they will receive information. So once you get them there, you know, again, they'll open up. But this is what I do with the little people. I really don't teach them how to behave. I'm more effective when I teach them how to manage their time. So once I put them in position to manage their time, you know, again, they become coachable and more inspired to do things right and do things in an organized way and to actually position themselves for more assistance so that they can pretty much be themselves and deliver very positive back. So it goes back to teaching, reteaching, reinforcing, and then celebrating. But history, all of us benefit from that. And I, you know, so where can we go without the history piece attached to us? I just want to make sure we're going somewhere positive.
Are you able to show them that there is probably, well, I know for a fact there's actually far more positive in the history, in their history, than there is negative?
Yeah, and you know, the way I do that, again, it's about access and opportunity. So I work with them on this life skills piece because I've talked to them about, hey, man, you got to be in position for somebody to help you. Let's look like we will receive help. Okay? So let's position ourselves for assistance. And that's a life skill because a lot of times we're working with people who they haven't positioned themselves to be helped. And so that's where the self-care and the wellness and the time management piece comes in to help them with being coachable. And this is what you guys are going to probably find more off the cuff than anything. These basic life skills that we teach when we have access to the buildings, these kids actually go home and teach some of our basic principles to their parents. I was talking to an administrator from Atlanta that's getting ready to retire, and we had an appointment and a phone call, and he was so busy dealing with the situation. Guys, he's dealing with parents that are bringing negativity, unnecessary heat, and misinformation. Okay, so these basic life skills are for K through 12 and also the 13th graders. That's all of us. Anybody that's in the 13th grade, you're a full-time adult. You have to also position yourself to be coachable. And you have to also learn how to manage your time and take care of yourself. So these basic life skills, again, man, they help. And I just have testimonies and witnesses. I've seen my students go home and teach these life skills to their parents, and I've seen these parents take these basic life skills to work. I know of parents that have some of our charts and remedies on their wall in the office because people want to win. People want to compete, and they just feel good about the program and where it's going with regards to the outreach and the positivity. You have to teach kids how to handle negativity. And nobody talks about that.
Coach, if I can ask, what is the biggest challenge that you have to face for younger people and older people with regard to what you just talked about?
Not being coachable. You know, there's a difference between smart people and intelligent people. The smart guy can't cross the street in New York. Okay? So sometimes some people are so smart you can't tell them anything, and that's my biggest challenge with adults and kids. So a lot of that comes with people just not being positive, not being inspirational. And that hurts sometimes because it makes your battle a little tougher because you're positioning yourself to fight things that, you know, at the end of the day, you're wasting time sometimes. So the number one challenge, man, is just it really boils down to accountability and service, because these schools, like you mentioned earlier, man, they're a safe haven for people. So we almost need the education reform piece to the point where we got to realize, man, that if we have the schools have space and opportunity, there are times when those buildings can be open, man, and that safe haven is really that. So you got to get to the nuts and bolts of the issue, which is our 3Ps program, when we try to enlighten people about, in America and around the world, the most successful people have the 3Ps in place. Number one, y'all work with me on this. Listen to me on this. You're going to pick something up out of this. The number one thing everybody on the globe agrees with is what? I'm waiting for your answer, and I'm going to give you 3 seconds.
I'll yield my 3 because there's so much.
Okay, now here we go. There's not a lot that we all agree on, but the number one thing that we all agree on in the world is what time it is.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, so time is your success. How you manage your time is going to manage how successful you are. So here you go. With the 3 Ps, you're talking about we have people, right? There's a lot of people here. And we have places. There's a lot of places we can go. Space and opportunity, empty, full, whatever. Places. You know what we're missing with the 3rd P is? Programs. Effective programs that are based on accountability and service. That's how you move a group of people in a society. So when you only focus on the people and the places, come on, man, that's where we are. The other thing people agree on on this earth and the globe and the United States of America are traffic lights. See, I don't do green people, black people, white people, Asian people. All of us are people. All of us at one time or another. I bet you stop at that red light, don't you guys? So there's 3 colors of people we deal with. The greens, the yellows, and the reds. Once you learn how to deal with those different temperaments and attitudes and people, now you're growing. So the third thing that we all agree on, I don't have that answer, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I know you are. It makes sense, doesn't it? So imagine that anything I said on this call today is a part of our curriculum and base program to teach kids how to be coachable, to teach them in middle school, because we run a hardcore middle school success program, and it's growing to the point where I'm actually training life skills coaches as we speak every day now, because I have a lot of people, man, that has bought into this life skills coaching piece in the middle school success program. Because the number one way you fix high schools is attacking the middle schools right now, gentlemen. That's my role. I just got to attack the middle schools. And having said that, you know, that's why we came up with the website. We have a great group of retired professionals. I even have some professionals that are career conversions, I call them. They're coming over to this area because we want to put the best possible people and positive people in position to service these schools and communities in a way that we have never done it before, because now is the time to act now, think differently, and to be positive and do something different and not be afraid to step on stage and compete at the highest level when a challenge comes, because we're being – all of us are being challenged right now. All of us. As a society, we're being challenged. So, again, man, y'all were talking about the Hall of Fame earlier. Well – the people that don't mind competing at the highest level, they'll welcome this challenge, and I help them. I train them because they don't necessarily know how to work with young people, and they may not have done it before. But after they go through our coaches certification and training, they feel real good about helping out. So it takes a process. That's where we're going.
Mm-hmm. How long a program is it, and are women or men more receptive to it?
I didn't hear the first part. I'm sorry, you're breaking up.
How long, what's the length of time in which the program entails?
It's a year-round program. Once they join our program, they're in it for life, and hopefully we'll turn them around and they come back. So we work with the regular school, approved school calendars around the nation, whatever's in place with the different divisions of the schools, and then we have a summer follow-up program, and then we're right back in the fall. So we go fall, spring, summer, and different ways to have opportunity for these young kids. You know, we want to take them to colleges, visits, and do different things. You got to expose them mm-hmm. to places and programs that they've never seen before tangibly. So that goes back to my question earlier about what the number one thing that has impacted our program is the engagement. But while we're scratching our head right now and figuring out how to do what, Life Coach Academy is ahead of the game, gentlemen, and that's a very positive piece. We're ahead of the game. We're ahead of returning. When we return, we're going to return with an impact and such a positivity that we'll be in position to help the principals, help the teachers, but more importantly for me, help the students and the parents. We all need help. They need help. And when you get to my area of, you know, I've kind of been all over the country and I've seen the competition. I've participated in the competition. So we got to bring people that have this expertise to come back and have access to these buildings that you guys call a safe haven. And I trained them how to do that because this is the thing, you know, a lot of times I run into professionals, entertainers, NBA, NFL, you name it. I got a wide range of people, but they want to help. But you know what they don't want to do? They don't want to waste their time.
Yeah.
Okay? So, and that's why, man, everybody wants to help, but I swear, man, they don't want to waste their time. And I don't waste their time. I take pride in that. So that's why I have them take the certification course, and so they'll understand about our outreach and how to teach. Mm-hmm. I participated, man. We had a guy come in not even long ago. He came in as a speaker to middle school kids. This dude talked about himself for about an hour, man. My kids didn't care nothing about this guy and what he was talking about. So that's when I said, you know, when people come into a school, man, they have to be trained and take a course on how to present and put yourself in position to make an impact, or you're wasting our kids' time. Mm-hmm. They don't care how many points you scored. They don't really care, but they want to know the real stuff that relates to them.
Right.
But it's a way that you can talk about your superlatives and all the great things. But, man, if you're running 60 minutes, my people looking at you funny. So
that's right.
I don't do that. You know, so they want to help. So it goes back to the professionals want to help, and they have done everything to help. I have former college presidents in life that participate with Life Coach Academy. I have a former commissioners of a major conference that wants to help NCAA, high school, VHSL. I have a wide range of professionals that have committed and signed on to our programs to do an Act Now reach to these communities and schools. And we're going to organize it again, guys, because I'm not going to waste their time. Success is everybody's time and how you use it. But at the same time, when you're talking about working with kids and servicing them, you got to know what you're getting into. Even if you're volunteering, you have to be trained properly to work with this group. And the group has to be trained to receive the information. So that's where life skills coaching really come in, because they get consistent teaching. So don't forget that now. You got to train the kids to receive the information, or you're wasting your time again. So you see how it bounces off of each other, how the adults and the professionals and the kids, and that's our goal in terms of linking the schools and the community. It's a way to do
it. Well, Coach,
it's not but a giant conference, and that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, before you go further with it, just one more question before I put it back to the panel again. Do you feel that prior to pandemic, that black kids were getting done justice
with a proper education and the approach toward them getting an education in this endeavor. You know?
No, period.
Mm-hmm.
No. I don't even know how else to say it. I'm not even going to take anybody else's time with that. I'm going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, what you got to remember, and this is where I come from, being an athletic guy. That's fun. That's entertainment. That's score. That's competition and championships. But at the end of the day, man, when those buses roll out of those buildings and 90% or 88% of the kids go home, who is their coach? Nobody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what you think you're sending back home until the next day? You leaving negativity? You're coming into a building that's possibly not servicing your need. We all have needs. And then you're going back to the negativity. So, come on. That's why my answer is no. I want to mm-hmm. have an outreach for a wide range of students that don't have access to a football coach or a basketball coach. How you going to have 300 kids right. try out for a middle school team and you keep 15?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man.
That's
Hall of Fame type stuff. I don't do that.
Yeah. All right. That's what I'm talking about. Coach, any last questions for Coach Bailey?
How do we get in touch with him?
m.bailey@mylifecoachacademy.org is my email. My website is My Life Coach Academy. I'm very easy to find. I don't hide from anybody. I have the same cell number I had when they let us have cell phones. But there's a way to get in touch with me pretty quick. mylifecoachacademy.org is the website.
Where did you coach before?
I started with my number one coach in the world, man. Coach Richard McPhee. He was my college coach, and then I became an elementary school teacher when I finished, and I majored in education and psychology at Virginia Union. So I would get out of school around 3 o'clock, and I'm like, I don't know what this world is about, man, but I got to find something else to do besides the yard. I was a young guy. So that's when Huguenot High School was up and running and rolling with Richard McPhee. So I go see them play one Friday night, and then my college teammate Dylan was a coach, William Dylan. Real big-time All-American, just shut it down. I don't want to talk about him right now because I'm going to get sad. He's not here no more. But Dylan was coaching, and then I volunteered and coached the next year. And that's how all of this stuff started, guys. See, that's why I wasn't so quick to just give a dude a job at the college level, man, because I came from JV and volunteering and washing uniforms and shutting my mouth up and being a good teammate. Sometimes people want to jump into the coaching profession right now because it looks good on TV, and I don't do that. And the bad part about it is we mess around and hire some of them. I hope I answered your question.
Oh,
that's
like amazing. Surely did. Surely did. Coach, as we do with new guests, we don't want you to be just a new guest. At this part of the mm-hmm. forum, you have the opportunity to sit back and talk about anything you want
as your last licks. So please, the floor is yours.
Okay, again, the biggest thing for me is outreach, act now, positivity for youth and adults. We just need to do a better job of linking the schools and the communities together and just mm-hmm. all working together to be coachable, okay? I made a comment earlier about people being smart and people being intelligent. All right, guys, you got to look at it, man. I'm from Roosevelt, Long Island. I'm going to blow mm-hmm. you away for a second. Roosevelt High School, I was born in Brooklyn. But on Roosevelt, Long Island, man, this high school, Julius Irvin's High School, Public Enemies right. High School, Eddie Murphy's mm-hmm. High School, Stephen White, Guy, those just globals. But this is the thing. They all have the same mentality as I do. You're supposed to be of great character. You're supposed to help and assist. And you're supposed to serve, and you take education seriously no matter where you come from. But at the end of the day, we know how to have fun, and we also know how to compete at the highest level.
We're not intimidated by competition at the highest level. At the highest level. Eddie Murphy went on stage around in the 10th grade. So I'm not saying anything was in the water, but at the end of the day, if you're around a lot of positive teachers and a lot of positive community people, and if your principal knows the name of almost everybody in the building, and you have a culture and a community working together, you're not going to lose. You're not going to lose. You're not going to lose. You're going to practice winning. How and why? The teacher's going to check you. The principal's going to check you. But it's a relationship process that goes with education. So that's why I'm getting off the bench now, because I see a need. I see a need, and not only is there a need, it's an act now need. COVID, we were already behind. We were already behind pre-COVID. So can you imagine? Can you imagine socially disadvantaged, economically disadvantaged, and low-income communities? If you were behind then, come on, man.
Yep.
You know what kind of news that's going to be for like the next 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 or 8 years if we don't act now and take these schools a little bit more seriously with regards to linking the community and the schools with positive people and managing our time? So you know, everybody talking about reopening the school. Reopening what? What kind of school are you going to reopen? After 2020? After 2020? Come on, man. That was the biggest lesson in school day for all of us. I'm a different guy. I got a different kind of fire right now after the summer of 2020. But I'm just not going to keep speaking about it, though. So I'm going to be coachable. I'm going to coach kids. I'm going to be inspirational, okay? I'm going to think positive. I'm going to put programs in place. I'm going to bring positive people together that realize that success is your time, and we're going to manage our time. We're going to have an impact, okay?
There
so here's the three programs that we're working on, and I'm going to let you guys go. These are the three programs we're working on. The CARE program is K-12, but it's a middle school attack. Okay, and you know why we're attacking the middle schools, because we want the high school careers to be more aligned with success. So if you go through our CARE program in middle school, when you hit the ninth grade, you'll hit the ninth grade the same way they hit the ninth grade in Ireland.
Right.
With a blue collar path, white collar path, or college. So that's any kid that enters our program, they'll be college and career ready prior to ninth grade. Okay, so along the other thing that goes along with that program is the UBU. It's inspirational and it's motivational teaching courses that I have. We have them on Wednesdays pretty much for women. Women's Wednesdays will be starting those up within the next week or so we can attract more young ladies and have more positive women reach out to the girls. The thing about my programs that I oversee now across the nation, I have more young ladies than guys. Why? Because the ladies are the girls run to organization and leadership and positive people. They run, and I don't have enough positive people right now that can assist me because of their time schedules. But I'm making the schedule so tight that I'm actually programming people to come in now once they get their certification. So the biggest thing across the board for all of us guys is to be inspirational and positive and start taking self-care and wellness seriously and stop letting it be a T-shirt or a flag or a joke or a commercial. Self-care is real. Wellness is real. But the number one thing that's real to me is time management, and success is your time.
All right. Coach, I want to thank you for taking time to talk to us tonight. Thank Reggie as well for setting things up. Please go see.
Yeah.
Don't be a stranger. You're welcome back anytime.
Hey, I want to thank you, and please, I want to thank Reggie. Reggie, from day one, you got to watch when you keep calling people your day one. Day one, to me, is real. When you my day one, that's how we riding it out. So Reggie been day one for me. It's not about sports for him. Reggie is about community and schools and service. So Reggie handles all of my media with regards to radio, any talk show coming up, and my speaking engagements. Reggie will release that for me. And so Reggie, again, here you got a guy that says, Coach, I just want to help. So you see what I'm saying? So you see the power of being around positive people and having positive relationships. He said, Coach, I just want to help. So I want to reach more people like Reggie so that you guys can join the team, because this is a team process, gentlemen. It's a UBU team. Be inspirational. Be coachable. Help link the community in the schools and take it seriously. We're behind. Compete at the highest level and act now. That's the team I want people to join. But thank you, God, for thank God for sending Reggie to me years ago when I was in high school sports. Reggie saw the athletic director piece. He saw the head coach piece. He saw all of the highlights, the national championships at 2005, and traveling all along the world in athletics. That's fun. That's great. But right now, all of those people that don't have a coach in their life, I want them to join Life Coach Academy. Be a part of it, and let's be inspirational and help us get in front of the ball so that we're not always behind the ball.
There you go. Thank you again, Coach. Peace. Please go stay out
right,
there.
Guys. Thanks for having me, man. Love you guys. Appreciate your service, man, and commitment.
Take care now.
Very well. Well, Bailey,
every day.
Peace.
Yeah.
Coach. And Reggie, we're happy that you brought the brother in. To throw something really good and positive into the pot tonight. You know, adversity is something that we suffer and strive to recover from as we get older. It hits us sometimes when we're too young to really appreciate the depth of it, and sometimes when you're an adult, you get hit with it. But there are those rare occasions when you get the chance to do something about it. And right now, I'm speaking specifically about one Patrick Ewing. People forget Patrick supposedly had learning difficulties when he came out of Ringin Latin High School in the Boston area before he became the Hoya Destroyer at Georgetown. And now, in all this time in between where he's become a star, a Hall of Famer, he couldn't get the professional coach job. Why? Because he was too tall? No, they didn't want to give their brother a job. And he was willing to coach for food, literally. But 49 years afterwards, after leaving the Hoyas and Big John Thompson, Patrick Ewing comes back home. And not only does he do damage, he does it in almost a mirror image of the style that which Coach Thompson, was famous for. As he put the wood to Creighton, did a defensive display similar to what Georgetown put to St. John's and Luke Carter's second one, where they shut them down totally. It led to a victory, and the Hoyas, who were only 13-12, waltzed through the Big East tournament. No easy feat. Back in the day, the Big East was the beast. And they are now in the NCAA tournament, which, of course, will start tomorrow. Now, fellas, it's not luck when you do it like that. Patrick was doing this for years. And this may seem a redundant question, but I got to ask it. Why? Why did Patrick Ewing get a break, especially after he spent all that time working for them?
And see, he did everything correctly. He was assistant in the pros. He did what, you know, they always say, hey, put in the hard work and you'll get rewarded. Now, Patrick comes from a hard working family from back in the day, you know, originally from Jamaica. And you got to remember, Patrick was a soccer goalie for the longest time.
Right.
He took up basketball late, but again, he worked at it. And we're all old enough to remember those signs during the time when he was in the Big East where, you know, Patrick can't read this or Ewing can't read this. You know, they automatically, you know, made him out to be the big black oaf. And he overcame all of that. Am I biased because he played the majority of his career with my team? Yeah, I got no problem saying it. What's sad is the slight that he got from his alleged home team, something that we as black men deal with all the time, whether it be in the professional world, whether it be in, you know, the sports world, the corporate world, you know, and that's what makes it, that's what makes, you know, the fact that, and he actually won, ironically, Mike, he won, I think it was 50 years to the day that John Thompson was hired originally by Georgetown. So you know, sometimes the gods do get it right. But not to drift too far off here, but what this also added to me was why it's going to be why the franchise in New York as a whole is still dealing with, you know, second city status in their own city. The Brooklyn Nets are the best team in New York, arguably the best team in the Eastern Conference as well. You know, that still has to be played out. But the bottom line is people, players and folks look at the Knicks like they look at the No, it's worse than that. They look at them like the Clippers from the early 70s, late 70s, early 80s.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Because you have to look at the recent years. Because, see, players talk and people talk. When they see how MSG treated Marv on the way out the door.
Yeah.
When you see how they treated Oakley, when you see how Phil Jackson scapegoated Melo and went after LeBron about his posse, when you see, and again, when you see how he was treated, how Patrick was treated, players see that. The league, you know, it's a small, you got to remember, it's a smaller circle in the NBA because, you know, because there's only less than about, say, a little over 300 or so players, but they talk. And I'm not talking about, you know, the CBS show or The View or what have you. I'm talking about there's a reason why KD wanted to go to the Nets instead of the Knicks. There's a reason why Kyrie went to Brooklyn instead of Manhattan. There's a reason why the Beard and Blake Griffin all went to Brooklyn. They want no part of that mess. Now, the fact that they hired World Wide West and other folks, it lets me know that somebody on that in the organization is saying, yeah, we know. Now, look, we all know one of the biggest albatrosses for that franchise is the fat, dumpy guy who thinks he's a musician. And is far from being an owner. But I say all that to basically say a lot of people see Ewing's what Ewing has gone through over the years, and there was genuine happiness for him. It almost doesn't even matter how far they go in the tournament. I mean, that'll just be gravy. The fact that you gotta remember when he got the job at Georgetown, a lot of people said, "Oh, this is a joke. This is ridiculous."
Right.
Well, you know, here we are, just a few years removed, and you know, you actually heard the words the words "Hoya Paranoia" over the weekend, and I thought I never would hear that again, even when John Jr. took over. But that's the plight, you know, black, you know, that's the plight that a lot of black men have to go through. And I think that's why it was so sweet, and especially to beat the Creighton plantation.
Oh, hell yeah. Now, you know, to compile that further,
the fact that Coach Thompson was always an intimidating figure, you know, and the fact that Patrick was looking obviously a lot at what Coach did, not just with coaching, but with everything, his whole posture and gestures, how he can handle himself. And I'm pissed even more at what the Knicks did to him, because the Knicks knew who the fuck he was. And the fact that they would work him like that after everything he has done for that piece of shit on 33rd Street makes my blood boil. I wish Patrick Wick went ahead and started bitch slapping people without baby powder.
Yeah, yeah, it's you know, there for all the positive that's being slowly generated on the court, they're still light years away off it, and it's gonna take a while before that changes, because perception and perception is like stink on shit. It's tough to get rid of, and that's
right.
The thing that is probably the biggest problem this franchise is facing right now. You know, I look at the other team that I root for, and they went through that for the longest as well. Now, you know, new owner and new optimism and whatever. And again, we'll see. You know, there's a lot. I mean, there's still a lot that has to be done. But for the first time in a long time, the arrow is pointing up. It is, again, if you're just talking about on the court, and again, you know, some nights they look great, some nights they, you know, look awful. But there is a positive, the arrow is pointing up
on the field.
But there's still a lot of work to do, because, you know, I've always said, you know, winning the division doesn't mean nothing to me. Winning, being the number one team in the East, I want to see another banner. I want another parade. I look at the 73 and the 70 banners, and you could almost see them crying every other night. When they, you know, after all this, you know, because you know they've seen some things that you can't unsee in regards to just basketball and what have you. The whole episode with Ewing just adds to that, and it was so avoidable. It is so avoidable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my question to you, Tony, is this: when is the NBA gonna wake up and say we don't need an owner in the NBA?
Well, it's, you know what the sad thing is. It's going to take a Donald Sterling moment, because Donald Sterling was just as well. You know, that's the sad part. It's going to take something. It's going to take something ridiculous before they'll whatever, you know. And it's look. Well, I'm old enough to remember where the Knicks meant something to the league. They're not that anymore. That's a pipe, and this is beyond, Mike, this is beyond me having to prove to my nephew that the Knicks have won championships. It's beyond all of that. It's a their reputation right now as a franchise amongst the NBA insiders and players. It is lower than a snake's belly.
I tried to tell my cousin that the New York Knicks won the NBA championship in 1973. You know what he said?
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Okay, go look it up.
Gary, you know the story. You know my story, right? I had to, not that I wouldn't have bought it anyway. When they came, you know, when the Knicks had their 50th anniversary a few years back, they came out with a DVD of all their greatest games. Now, I have a nephew who's a big Atlanta Hawks fan, big Dominique fan. And I told him, you know the Knicks have won two championships, right? I said, no, they haven't. Because he doesn't know, because
No.
He was born in the era of, you know, Patrick Ewing and Bernard King and whatever, and where they've been either, they've had their, ups and downs. I literally had to go out and buy this DVD, sit him down for a 3-hour thing, have him watch the highlight film of the 70 finals, and then have him to see the highlights of the 73 championship. We watched, matter of fact, the one full game that they had on it. They had the Willis game, game 7 of the 70 final, where he scored basically the biggest 4 points in the history of mankind. And the minute he scored them, that game was over, plain and simple. But that's the thing. There, even some old time fans, I just bought a hoodie. I just bought a Nick hoodie, but I made it a point to get it with the old logo. You know, the generic old logo.
Oh yeah.
Knicks and a basketball, not the splashy one that they made back
diamond,
in the day. The minute I saw it, I said, I'm buying that because specifically of the old logo, because the old logo, that's my Knicks. And I'm not trying to, I'm not going to disown, Patrick and Oak and Starks and Doc Rivers and Charles Smith, we have to talk. We're going to have to negotiate about that.
So you made a great point in regarding the image of what the Knicks give off. If we look at the four major sports, the Rangers, the Islanders, even the Devils, they're looked at with a certain amount of respect, partly because of their longevity, partly because of what they did during their peak times, and partly because, they roll with the status quo. In football, the Giants, very conservative organization. The Jets, they had one fucking year, and then they tried to milk that for as much as they could, but they're not looked at as liabilities to the league. The Knicks, that is a whole subject altogether. If you look at the way basketball blew up to become the second most popular sport, did the Knicks really have anything to do with that success? I don't think so.
No. Let's put it this way.
No.
I never thought I would say this. I would kill to get beat by the Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals at this point in time right now. Again. That's how bad it's gotten. I always tell people I've been a Knicks fan longer than I've been living, which is physically impossible, but I know. But that's the thing. But I try not to live in the past too much, but unfortunately, in some instances with this franchise, it's almost, I hate to say it, it's almost all what we've got left now. But like I said, I'm very optimistic with this group. And ironically, if you go to these fan sites and Facebook pages, they're trying to trade everybody but their mama on this team. There's so much visceral hate being spewed out about Julius Randle, who's having a hell of a year. But see, they didn't appreciate Melo when he was here. They didn't appreciate Patrick when he was here. I specifically remember a buddy of mine on the night that Ewing's jersey was going to be retired. So I'm going to go to the Garden tonight and go boo Patrick. And my first instinct, again, forgive me, Ma Gray, was to slap the taste out of his damn mouth. But I was like, okay, so why are you booing? So why are you going to boo the guy?
Yeah,
I just said, are you booing him because he didn't bring you a title? Are you booing him because, you know, you still have some Georgetown hate? Because, see, again, Patrick, for a guy who was at some point the most popular athlete in New York, there's still, he still gets visceral. I mean, I will never forget when Mark Messier wound up signing with the Vancouver Canucks and leaving the Rangers. You had folks saying if they hadn't signed Patrick to that big-ass contract, Messier would still be here.
That's right. I mean,
God damn, man. Really?
You know how they
really?
If the brother doesn't deliver, we paid that nigga too much money. We overpaid that nigga. And they don't bite their tongue about it anymore. You know, they don't hide it in clever language on the sports columns pages anymore. No, they say straight up what time it is in their mind. And that's why Patrick did not deserve the shit he got. Because, as Will Chamberlain said, nobody loves Goliath. Patrick was New York's Goliath. And he never got the help, the supplementary help or complementary help that he could have in order to win a title. Now, you got guys like Ron Swoboda who win one fucking title and everybody loses their mind over him. You know, the Rangers finally win one title. Now that everybody can die in peace, but it still comes back to perception. I don't see any white athlete getting dogged as much for not winning as any black one who's won. And Patrick won a lot of games. You know, he won a lot of – he got him in the playoffs several times, but that nigga's making too much money. He doesn't deserve all love. Boom, boom, boom. He's not super nigga, but because he was just a nigga, we can deride him now. That's the vibe I get. And Bernard King probably would have gotten the same thing, but the only reason he didn't was Bernard looked like he was going to kick somebody's ass, so nobody would diss Bernard King.
Yeah. It's see, the one thing, I try not to be whiny about it like the Red Sox fans because, you know, I don't know. To me, the Red Sox fans have gotten worse since they won championships. I mean, they were always a bunch of whining little bitches as far as I'm concerned. But even more so now since they've won a few titles. Now, you know, that whole thing of what the Knicks stood for, during that period of time, you know, when they, you know, the first team when it was Clyde, Barnett, Bradley, DeBuscher, and Willis, you know, that was a quote unquote special time. And even with the 73 team, when you basically added on Earl Monroe and Bibby and Jerry Lucas. Remember, they started their starting five in 73 are all in the Hall of Fame. And I know that there's others. I'm sure that the Celtics had maybe like one or a couple all starting fives that were all in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, that team, I guess, to me, again, was always a little bit special because, again, it wasn't that far removed from the 70 team. And, you know, they had to beat, everyone makes a big thing about, you know, when the Sixers went into Boston and won Game 7. No disrespect to the Sixers, but the 73 Knicks did that to get to the final. But again, it's unfortunately, because we're in that, you know, pre-1979 thing, only a handful of us remember that. But again, the sad thing is this past week stuff just brought back up more old wounds in regards to that franchise. And I think, like I said, all I want to be able to do is to see them first get their respect back, you know, put some respect by the name, I guess, as the kids say. But then, you know, just give me another banner and another parade, and I'm good. I'm not gonna say I'm gonna die in peace, but I'm gonna be like, I'm good.
The New York Knicks. In order to change this, they had to do three things. One is to get a new uniform. I'm sorry, you have to change that uniform. Two, you have to change that owner. Three, you have to change your image. Those three, if you don't change your owner, you can't change your image because the owner is the image.
I think if you get rid of the owner, all the other stuff will sort of pass itself. The uniform, I don't have too much problem because the old uniform is basically old school. Now, Dave, it's variations of it, but you know, I hear what you're saying, Gary, but you know, get rid of Dolan, and I think then you have a domino effect. You have a domino effect.
I wanted to play against Golden State, and they have a very good team. They do not coordinate with each other.
They're a work in progress. Let's put it this way. Me personally, I would build around four guys. Randall, Quigley, Toppin, Barnett. Anybody else after that, expendable.
That's a good plan. That's a good core.
They haven't had a core like that at that age. Because, see, probably may have to go back to Patino's first year when Patrick was still in his prime. They brought in Jackson. Mm-hmm. You had Johnny Newman. And then a year later they brought in Oakley was already there. So, but see, again, Ewing has had some years in the league as well as Oakley. Johnny Newman was Jackson was basically the youngin'. And remember, his backup was a fair to Midland guard that they wound up trading later by the name of Rod Strickland, which is another that was right up there. Letting him go was right up there with having to give up Lonnie Shelton for Marvin fucking Webster.
That should never happen.
They signed him as a big free agent, and that was during the period of time when they had to give up compensation. And I'll never forget when they said, okay, in lieu of the Knicks have to give up Lonnie Shelton. I was like, what? And we all know Lonnie Shelton wound up being a pillar for Seattle's championship that year later. But look, there are a gazillion of ex-Knick players that have gone on to championships and glory and all that. Hell, just the aforementioned Jackson came back in an Indiana uniform and helped Reggie Miller send them to hell home a few years back.
Have you guys seen the Reggie Miller winning commercial?
The one with Wendy's.
Yeah.
Hey, somebody, guys got to eat, man.
He's got to feed
those Fernando Tatis ears that he has.
Okay, all
right. Fellas, I want to change the dialogue a bit because we know tomorrow the NCAA tournament starts. Now,
really?
It starts only because the NFL and the NHL, and to a lesser degree the NBA, made it possible. They were working through the whole premise of how can we get this done and make all this money and not have any heat come at us because we're subjecting these student athletes, maybe dying like dogs due to COVID. Now, Professor, I want to start with you because this shit started deep down there in North Kakalaki where you are, where they did everything trying to get Duke into this damn tournament. Fortunately, it did not work. And because of that, you know, the tournament will go on. But just how much behind-the-scenes stuff was done in putting this out there before they drop the ball tomorrow?
Well, I mean, it's not so much behind the scenes that it is systemic stupidity. Once again, the HBCUs get to play in the playing. One of them get to play in the playing game. I'm only guessing because I don't really watch. I have a nephew who's all into bracketology and all that stuff. I've seen good black schools as well as bad black schools get screwed in this process, and nowhere is that more obvious than to put NC State and NCNT women into
the
bracket, and then send them all the way to San Antonio, Texas.
Yep.
To play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not racist. It's just bad judgment.
It's stupidity.
And to correct Tony on something that he was saying when he was talking about his other team in NYC. No, they've been doing the same screwed up stuff for ages. Just like the NCAA, they're doing the same old screwed up stuff they've been doing for ages. So it's obvious when it comes out, and you'll see. I mean, as hungry as people are for anything with black people sweating and running and sweating, I still don't see the numbers being up because you can't even go to the games now. But the underhand stuff I'm talking about is this. Okay, they couldn't finagle Duke in, but they got Carolina in. They suck all to be damned too.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow or another, it turns out that North Carolina A&T's men were hit the fan on the COVID tip, and all of a sudden they come back, oh, it was a false positive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Saturday night of the tournament is really not the appropriate place to tell somebody, oh, oops, we got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We got Patrick Ferrand in the mix as well. Patrick, can you speak up?
Live and living color, folks. What's up?
Hey, now.
But to wrap that up, They did what they could to get Duke in. Duke just couldn't win enough.
Mm-hmm.
And see, so many of these places, you see the young men doing their due diligence. But interestingly, Carolina made it back in. And Duke couldn't make it back in. But Carolina had, somehow Carolina was able to play two teams of COVID players where they were exposed by players from the other team and still never caught it. So you want to talk about underhanded? Or maybe it's just me.
Yeah.
Patrick, now that the tournament is going to be on again,
mm-hmm.
behind the scenes of college ball for a long time now with all of this, what adjustments did they have to make in lieu of seeing the NHL and the NFL make the financial moves to put themselves in being profitable, but we know the NCAA will talk out of both sides of the neck because of the so-called amateur status.
Let me follow up on what Fred said, which is related to what the bottom line is. Two teams that draw TV ratings
mm-hmm.
without question in college basketball, one or two teams in college basketball, which is systemic, which is symptomatic in every year when they're being placed in the regionals is North Carolina and Duke. Mm-hmm. They file, especially Duke. Duke actually sometimes can outrank TV viewing more than Knicks here in New York. Matter of fact, they call Duke Madison Square Garden their second home. That's how much they got it up here. So they're gonna try everything they could to get Duke in. They couldn't quite do it. North Carolina was going to say the same thing. They're going to put North Carolina. North Carolina has a problem nationally that draws people and draws viewers. They're going to put them in no matter what. Let me ask you this question. How many times have Duke or North Carolina been a decent team and been sent out west? Hell no. Well, they keep them somewhere in the west.
The thing is with them also is it's like the old Cowboys. 50% going to watch them to win. 50% want to see them get beat by 60. So,
guess who else? Who was the quintessential of this theory? It's called Notre Dame. Anything that they do, people going to watch. I agree with everybody said from what I've heard. Everybody said, but I know in terms of TV, in terms of eyeballs, in terms of pressing that button, where people will watch, in which. Particularly for Notre Dame, they have a following that's backed up by alumni and people in the Catholic Church that want to see them play.
Yeah.
So that's how it is, unfortunately. I'm not saying that's right. That's how it is.
Oh, no, yeah. And also, Patrick, they also, one of their, as Mike likes to say, big dastardly and Muttley things. I got to throw in Muttley for this one, Mike. I'm sorry. They got Michigan State and UCLA playing the late game tomorrow. Huh? Yeah.
BYU was not going outside the Bavarians.
Yeah, and they can't play and they're trying and see what's the whole thing. They will not play on Sunday.
They can't play on the holy day either.
But see, what's so funny is they've got these four virus replacement teams.
I understand why.
Come on, Tony. A payroll must be met, T. You know that?
There you go.
A payroll must be met.
You're halfway right, left, Reg. You forgot the S. Payrolls. Not just payroll.
I didn't accent the syllable. Hey, but Patrick, real quick. Hey, Patrick, the brother from Illinois that wear the black mask. How long before they outlaw that? Since they did to LeBron James, they're gonna say, "Look, Negro, you man, it's a Long Ranger. We can't have this. A black man with a mask. How dare you?"
Reggie, here's the difference. He ain't got Beyonce shaking her butt behind him. That's the problem. They ain't gonna let him wear it. They'll let him wear the mask. And also, it's the content. Let me tell you something. Also, if he was singing "I'm Black and I'm Proud" behind it, that mask would be off.
Hey, how upset the white boys about LeBron getting pizza of the Red Sox? I know they pissed, man.
Wait, here's the quintessential getting pissed off, Reg. Do you know what today is? St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, the Slavery Day, which I don't wear no fucking green. I'm sorry, but
Know something else? Two places. Where here in Jersey and New York, where they get drunk 1 minute before 12, so they know they're drunk on St. Patrick's Day, and 1 minute after, so they know they've been drunk on St. Patrick's Day, is in New York and Boston. They sell more beer in New York and Boston today than the River Flows and the Niagara Falls up in New York.
But so much for the pandemic
and 6 feet. But Patrick, what about all the drinking they do the other 364 days?
Yeah. Let me tell you something. I got a guy that I've been buying papers for all my life, Gary DeFilippo, who's Italian, but his wife is Irish, which is a place that his father was the Sons of Italy, and you never rob his store because you hope the police find before his friends are coined. But that's another story. I went there Sunday, and they had a parade in front of his place.
Irish and Italians and having a good time. I said, look here. Come on, Patrick, you're on. I said, this is the place, but let me get my papers and get out of here. You know? And they said, oh, Patrick, you're Irish. You're Patrick. You're Irish. I said, okay. And I walked through. I said, I want to say, yeah, I'm Irish on the 17th, but back in the 18th tomorrow, I'll be a nigga again. I didn't say that. But I just walked on and kept on going. Yeah, that's.
You sound like Cheryl Underwood on the talk.
No,
hey,
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
The only thing I deal with green on Patrick on St. Patrick's Day is collard greens. That's about as close as I'll
come
to.
And some money in my pocket.
Unfortunately, I'm in that lower tax bracket, so I can also. So most of my money is most of my. If it is green, it's a lot of Georges and not a lot of Abrahams and not a lot of not a lot of Benjamins.
Green. I like Professor Fred Witt with the big green. You know, Professor had those big for Frankenstein.
But I will say this:
the only thing I got is green is money.
I will say this, guys. There's a lot of white boys up in Boston that pissed that he's on part of that team, and they can't do a damn thing about it.
Good.
What could be nastier right now is St. Patrick's Day? All these motherfuckers running around drinking green beer with no masks, and meanwhile in Florida, all these nasty ass motherfuckers walking around with no masks. On spring break.
They didn't hardly any clothes, but go ahead.
They're going to say,
well, those Negroes, you know, they're down there and they're contagious. Unfucking believable.
Mike, that smell, we're coming. I think I recognize that smell coming from the south. So you can.
I can tell you one thing, Mike. The herd immunity that they talk about. Is being praised by folks in Florida because, see, we having that bad without wearing masks. Okay, now.
Okay. I saw them at the beach.
Talk about herd immunity. Yeah. Herd immunity is really what it is.
They'll see.
Can I digress?
Now they're praising Ron DeSantis by making it such a great move. Okay. He had COVID, too. You know that, don't you? Fine. Okay, so.
Breaking news.
Yes.
Patrick Peterson to the Minnesota Vikings.
Holy shit.
Money.
Wow. Yeah, really.
Wow.
Money.
Hey, man, I'm just like, wow. Why would he go? I mean, listen, get all you can get. But he's got Kirk Cousins for a quarterback now. So I hope he's got a big fat bonus in his contract because that's all the money he's going to see. That non-playing motherfucker up there in Minnesota.
Yeah, their defense is not what it used to be. So I guess he's gone from being the only guy
that makes it too much.
Put it this way. He's gone from being the only guy that makes tackles in Arizona to being the only guy that makes tackles in Minnesota,
no shit.
I guess.
Hey, Patrick, Drew Brees, what network is he going to be on?
NBC. It's a wrap. NBC.
And what gets me about?
So who place he taking? He need to take Tony Romo's fire ass flick. God,
that ain't happening. No, Tony Romo's king up there now. Tony Romo much more than anybody else in the
yep.
I call Tony No More.
Reg, that's why God made the mute button, Reg. You can watch football with the sound down.
Reggie, guess what else, Reggie? Don't nobody make no more money than Romo.
That's right. You mean Tony No More? Every time we throw up pass, oh no, another interception, Tony No More. But I tell you one thing, Patrick. With Chris Patrick going to the Washington football team. Being for a rude way, I don't know what Ron Rivera's thinking, but that's a dumbass move.
I don't know what makes anybody think that this cat can play. He's streaky. He's like the guy at the crap table.
He falls out at the end of the year. Hey, where's his ass end of the year? Somewhere sitting on the bench.
Yeah, exactly. He craps out at the end of the year. If you look at his stats, he only has a couple more touchdowns than he does interceptions. But, see, that bullshit Fitzmagic crap that they started,
when he was coming off the bench. All that did was
Mike, they don't care because
they don't,
they're going to drive another quarterback this year anyway. Just hold on.
What about Tyrod Taylor with the Houston Texans? I'm scratching my head with that one.
I'm not surprised. You mean Watson?
You mean Watson, Reggie?
Yeah.
Why are you doubting my brother for the Tech? Why you going to drop
the
Well, look, put this way. All I'm saying is when there are allegations, you want to get it, you know, when there's allegations being thrown out there, you, at the very least, you want to make sure the guy that you have the right name out there because brothers have, you know, brothers have gone to jail and worse for allegations.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm not trying to call you out, but I'm just saying.
I'm at a loss for the timing of the situation, Tony. All of a sudden, he supposedly touched somebody and wanted to massage inappropriately. Nobody says shit when Brett Favre has dick out taking pictures for a masseuse named Jen Sturgeon who waxes his knob.
Yes, it was.
That's bullshit. You know, it's unadulterated bullshit.
And by the way, I don't know if folks have read this little factoid that sort of got snuck in under the rug. The lawyer for the alleged victim apparently is a friend of, get ready, the team owner.
Mm-hmm. Who has a billboard in Houston condemning DeSean Jackson?
Oh, sure. Sure.
So that's why DeSean said, "I ain't signed." He said, "You can sue me if you want to, but I ain't signed nothing."
Sure.
I said, "Let's go to court."
Sure. See, it's not so much that they're not going to trade him, but see now they're going to assassination.
But here's the thing.
It's going to blow up in their face because at some point they're going to have to. And then, surprise, surprise, his value is going to go down because you went out of your way to slander him.
Mm-hmm.
See, they never think, but see, folks never think of that. They're so caught up in trying to scandalize their name. I mean, they're in a sense, they're willing to lose money just to prove a point.
And Tony, about what you set up, he's going to make his money anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, he already has. He pretty much already has. But see, again, they're gonna play it out in public. Because see, the sad thing is, and forgive me, because I don't want to offend anybody. Because
I don't care.
Whether he allegedly raped these women or not, they got exactly what they wanted. They want to scandalize his name.
Mm-hmm.
That's all this is all about. They want to scandalize his name.
Because
it presents a bad perception.
There you go. There you go.
Tony, in the words of my daddy, God rest his loving soul to him, I miss it every day. He said, boy, don't go out there misrepresenting my name.
Mm-hmm.
Which means if you mess up my name, you got problems.
Exactly.
I'm gonna do everything, everything to keep my name intact. If you think Deshaun's going to sit back and wait on it, what did Deshaun say today? Let's go to court. Because I know why they're doing it.
And see, exactly. Because see, you can always, I'm not going to say always, but you can somewhat tell how a person reacts. Because put it this way, the fact that no one tried to sue Jose Canseco lets me know that all of it was true. The fact that DeSean basically came out swinging and blinging, said let's go to court and prove my name, that lets me know. Because see, the silence speaks more in a lot of times than the actual wording. But when you are ready to be like, hey, I'm ready to unsully my name. To me, that says exactly what I needed to hear. Because I know there's other people out there saying, oh, he's going to deny it anyway. But there's a way you deny it. Because he could very easily say, he very easily could have come out with, like, a quote-unquote statement from his lawyer. He came out yep. on his own. Mm. Let's rock.
Hey, Tony, Tony, I'm gonna give you a quick story. On the front of the Nets, we had a situation in which Willis Reed got called. Willis was GM at the time. Willis mm-hmm. got called with a phone call. Got a mm-hmm. phone call from a party in Detroit. And in that party in Detroit, you know, some young lady was at this party and said she got raped by somebody with some NBA players. Make a long story short, and the person that this young lady was, she was sitting in front of the police and crying. Well, she could do that because her father was a police sergeant, police force. Mm. And the person in which they accused says was known to be loose in the first place, but he said, hell no, I didn't rape her. He said, let's go to court tomorrow, mm-hmm. right? And that person was a guy named Derek Coleman. DC was as low as any loose kind you go, but he says, me, rich woman, I get women knocking at my door every day, and I'm going to rape your ass? Because she thought mm-hmm. a cop was a sergeant. They were going to get a certification. They were going to get paid. He wind up suing her, and they dropped the case.
That's right. I like that. That's like Big Poppy. When shit came out that Poppy had supposedly taken something, he didn't even mm-hmm. hesitate. He said to the press, what I take? Tell me what I took. You know, he got on mm-hmm. their asses in English and Spanish, mm-hmm. and everybody had to back the fuck up. Mm-hmm. See, people mm-hmm. get too cute with that shit, thinking they can just say something or plant an innuendo, and some folks are going to be all right with that. That's mm-hmm. why I'm surprised some of these news people haven't gotten their ass kicked behind some of the shit that they've done.
Well, some people make calls. Somebody got, you know, Derek called his owners. The owners called NBA. NBA called, you know, certain people. It says, you can do it if you want to, but we're going to back the player. So that's the mm-hmm. that they don't want.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what happened. Uh-huh. And see, I find it interesting. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, she's filing a civil suit,
mm-hmm.
right? So
she went straight for the money because she had nothing to stand on legally.
Well, see, again, it's you know, excuse me. If she was truly going, if no one wants to poo-poo rape, so to speak, but when she's basically said that this is just about cash. You know, she wants to be for her pain,
mm-hmm.
and, her pain and suffering apparently has a price to it. Thank you, Ted DiBiase.
Mm-hmm. And make sure mm-hmm. the lawyer gets paid so his name gets out there so he can get free publicity.
Yeah.
So what's the chick look like? That's what I want to know.
Hey, what's the chick look like?
Hey.
No. Don't go there, Reg, with that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
You'd be surprised.
But hey, yeah, I know. But you know what? Hey, Patrick, we can't have Benjamin Crump making all the money.
Hey, I could have sworn I saw him knocking at the door while he left the other place. I could have sworn.
Well, Patrick, he's
in Oklahoma with the high school basketball team. No, he's mm-hmm. in flight, right, Patrick?
Put it this way. It's only because of them two ambulances that he missed from before. That's all I'll say.
How does Negro fracture all 50 states? People came back to the bar in Virginia. This Negro in all 50 states, including Hawaii.
Yep.
Well, whatever states he can't practice in, he got 27 million reasons to apply there. But let me throw this into the practice point. Mm-hmm. One of my soap patrollers out in Minnesota, he's been talking about the coverage there and the fact that it seems tainted already, the timing of putting out the announcement about the selling, all of that has thrown it in jeopardy. I was trying to get a response from her tonight to see if they go to a different venue, which I'm sure they will, where
the right
state will it go and where will it be similar to the Simi Valley mode that unfortunately happened in the Rodney King case.
Yeah, well, it's
they want an all-white jury. They want an all-white jury.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
They do, so much.
Yeah, and look, that's, you see, again, that just shows you where, you know, because see, again, it just lets you know that, in a sense, they're already trying to, you know, rig this thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm finding out, where's the black attorney general? That's what I'm saying. Where's he at right now?
There you go.
Well, hey, he just got Viking tickets, didn't he?
He found out Patrick Peterson got traded to the Vikings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the suite.
Put it this way. At this point in time right now, this thing could get scarier than Stacey Dash wanting to date black men all over again.
No.
Clueless about that.
Yeah, to bring in Clueless.
Tony.
Bring in the Clueless, did you? Hey, isn't it amazing?
Can I tell you something?
And they got no jobs. Isn't it amazing?
There you go, Rich. But I'm going to tell you something. We all know the old model for her, or the old adage for a woman who she's fine, but she's crazy.
Yeah.
If I was a young boy, I'd be crazy for a little while.
Hey, she had the long dick, too, man.
She's fine as hell.
I'm sorry. She looks like $1 million, but it ain't worth the $2 million you're going to have to pay in court costs.
That's true. I might try to pay it, though.
Hey, I'm telling you. Hey, Stacey Nash, she needs jungle fever. And she's been around the people on Fox too long. Give her some jungle fever, and she'll be just fine.
Yeah, well, let me swing in the jungle for a little while.
Yeah.
And wait, and I've seen one of my boys is a photographer. I've seen pictures of her, just more than naked, but she took some nice pictures of her, and she bow legged too, and know how to throw it. Girl, Jesus. And the dress she had on.
That's a two hour show in of itself, right there.
You
like her again, Patrick?
Don't
look
between the lines. You hear her voice saying, "Hello." Is it me you're looking for?
it ain't no brother, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, apparently not.
She looks wonders.
Look, she looks more like
a brother.
She looks more like a Carl type.
We interrupt the broadcast for your daily Dion watch. The Prime watch is now at 3-0. What they gonna do to make it better? Who can put up opposition to these guys?
Who do they play next?
Her addendum, or whatever you want to call it, to that, he's only winning one real game. So go ahead.
The next two games are going to be canceled because of COVID-19. I was waiting on Alabama A&M to get them.
Put it this way, let's be real. Even if they do run the table this year, it's not tainted. It'll be a legit. I mean, if they go legit undefeated. But let's be honest, the real season starts in the fall when everybody's back.
Yeah.
Because when he comes back, Alcorn will be back, and oh by the way, a couple of schools by the name of Bethune-Cookman and the Florida Agricultural and Mineral College will be there as well. University, I'm sorry. So we'll see. I mean, look, 3-0 is 3-0. You give them his due. 3-0 is 3-0. Yeah. But let's see, you know, and it'll be interesting to see how the rest of this plays out. Like I said, I have no idea who they play next. But apparently I've heard from the grapevine that there is an unsung thing, basically, where all their remaining games, as of right now, are going to be on the deuce till further.
Yeah,
let me tell you something.
They did a rerun yesterday.
That's the key, Rich. The reruns of Jackson State playing ball will happen on the big dog once or twice during next season.
Interesting.
Those reruns are nothing but a setup for what's coming.
I hope they get corporate sponsors. That's all I'm saying. They better get
Tony can vouch this because he worked at ESPN. They don't do reruns because they ain't got nothing else to show.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's what I'm saying. They got to fill that spot. Payroll must be met.
Although Patrick, until baseball season starts and that NHL contract kicks in, they may do a league. They may do a league more rerun because of that. But they're definitely. Let's put it this way: they're definitely going to ride the wave and see, and see because you know all of their. I mean, look. Their Saturdays, unless there's, you know, because remember.
They play on Sunday.
But they also play, but they have a couple of Saturday games, I think, on their schedule, do they not?
I think that one of them is canceled.
Oh, they've canceled them already? Okay. Well, let's put it this way. Are you going to watch the NIT or a live football event? I didn't even realize they still had the NIT this year.
They had Richmond and Toledo on tonight.
Hey, Patrick, they made sure they put the band out there in Jackson State. I looked, I said, oh, my God, this is January, February, March. I know, September.
Rich,
I got it right.
Rich.
I said, oh, God.
if your eyes get excited, there's some other eyes that's going to get excited to let them know. Well, let's show this for a little while. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Jackson State is going to take advantage of every hour they can, every eyeball they can to look at them.
That's true. This reminds me of the old tape delay days that they used to do with Nick games and other games like that.
Mm-hmm.
When you
mm-hmm.
score, but you watch anything.
Matter of fact, guys, the Jackson State women's game in the NCAA, it's on ABC Sunday.
Guys, I'm telling you, it ain't by coincidence.
Yeah. Exactly.
Not by coincidence.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, the NCAA on ABC, Jackson State.
The thing is, what they're doing this year with the women's tournament, finally, is they're ferreting out the game. Basically, it looks like all the games are going to be on either ESPN, the Deuce, ESPN, or ABC. It only took them 1,000 years to realize, hey, we can get more teams on now. So,
I want you to know kind of A&T going to be on, because I know A&T got NC State.
Well, put it this way. A&T women and Jackson State women, unfortunately, are playing at the same time. So one of them is going to be on ABC, and the other one's going to be on either ESPN2, it's going to be live. They're not going to – the women's games are live.
Okay.
All the women's games are going to be live.
And Tony, let me add to this. What you're saying is 100% correct. Like I told you before, how much money did they lose last year?
Oh, yeah. 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 Look, the main reason – Mike hit it right on the head. The main reason why – there is an NCAA tournament this year is because of the NBA, because of the NHL, because of the NFL and Major League Baseball. They were not going to have another year without the NCAA tournament.
And losing that money, and it's $6 billion? Oh,
right.
We'll show the janitors sitting at the floor this year.
Since we talk about losing that money, where's the money going to be spent? Duke's not in the mix. North Carolina's a liability, you know. Are we going to see shitloads of money bet on Gonzaga?
Betting-wise, you know better than I do. Right right now it is. I think it's 250 to 1, something like that. They got Gonzaga winning. But, you know, the old rule is, since 1976, ain't nobody been undefeated. There's some teams that can beat. See, let's go back to days when UCLA won all the championships. I give them credit. But UCLA wasn't playing everybody in the whole country. So,
oh, God.
That's right.
Yeah.
It takes six games to win the NCAA. They got it with six in a row.
It was four by then.
That's it. It was four by then.
And the only time they were on the East Coast time was when they got to the Final Four.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you. So but the situation, where the situation is now, they're in one town in Indianapolis when they get there, and they got to win 6-3. We'll see. Because I believe Bill is waiting for them. I'm bored.
All I know, the Wizard of Westwood had a little financial help back in them days nobody wants to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
That's another two-hour show.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Reggie. That's a three-hour, that's a four-hour show. Reggie,
I know. It's very little secret nobody's talking about.
There's a guy around here who I know who went to UCLA. He was a student. And I need to have him on one day. You know, and I'll leave that alone. And wait, you think Michigan was bad by giving money? You would hear what UCLA got.
Yeah.
And nobody talks about it, and never will. Mm-hmm. Because John Wooden is a god in college basketball. You're not going to talk about it. You're not going to ruin his image. But
of course
the
not.
Five black guys in Detroit, oh, no, we can dog them.
Exactly. Hell, you still got some people that are still pissed off at Texas Western beating Kentucky.
Amen. Tony,
got that right.
We can laugh at that. We can laugh at it, but you ain't wrong.
Oh. Yeah, but they didn't have no problem with Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. So bad they had to change their names so the other schools would play with them. You know, that's one that covers time, as my man was talking about when he came on and stuff. And before we go, I want to rewind back to where we started, because the Gil Hodges issue is something that really does bother me, because it's not just Gil Hodges.
Sure.
It was Jerry Kramer for a very, very long time. It was Drew Pearson until recently, and thank you for telling me. But the bottom line is, who the fuck did they piss off in them doing what they normally did? They didn't go out there trying to campaign to get in. People were stopping them from getting in, and I want to know why. Not W, not X. Why?
Mike, Gil Hodges won the 1969, he was a manager of the Mets, won a World Series.
Yep.
Gil Hodges was on the North, my Dodgers, the Dodgers fans were sitting my daddy's lap as a player.
Got on the wall. The rest of the team.
Right there, get you half the vote you need already.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, this one, I, you know, to this day, I still don't know what, I mean, you know, I want to know what GOAT he whatever, because again, he's basically Keith Hernandez with power. Now, the drug thing is probably the biggest thing that keeps Hernandez and Dave Parker out, even though
that's right.
Lord knows there's other more transgressions.
Yes, Lord.
Folks that they've allowed in the Hall of Fame. But you know, again, I always go back to, if you take just the four major sports, every decade since the 50s, I think there's at least 5 to 10 players in each one of those decades that should be in. You know,
Tony, let me say this, Tony. And there's no more loyal Dodger fan than me in the world. Matter of fact, I just wore my new Dodger jersey early this week, my new white jersey this week.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's look at it this way. I just mentioned about Gil Hodges' resume. Let me ask you a question. Is Kamala Sorter in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, he is.
That is it right there.
But everybody loved Tommy, no matter how big an asshole he was.
There you go, Fred. There you go.
Yeah.
That's my point, Fred.
Yeah.
That's my point.
And
Tommy was around those years when Gil Hodges was there. Tommy couldn't make the team. Gil Hodges makes the team, wins the World Series as a player, does it as a manager, and he can't get in.
Yeah. It's, you know, the more and more I think about it, I do think, you know, I go back and forth, but the more and more I think about it, I do think baseball's arrogance is probably they have the worst snubs because they've made it out to be so bigger than life, bigger than whatever. But football, yeah, but football, you know, I look at a Jim Marshall, I look at a Cliff Branch, I look at all the brothers we talked about in Four Quarters of Soul, and I said, you know, the NFL's got some explaining to do too, you know.
Oh, big time. Yeah. I mean, the book that Fred wrote. I mean, should let him know that. Please, come on.
Yeah. And
Fred's book should be in every NFL media department around the whole league.
And see, what's worse, what's worse, Gil, and a lot of, say, the pre-70s guys, because of analytics, they may never get it.
Wait, it's analytics, not analytics.
You have to be
anal.
You can't say analytics without, you can't spell analytics without anal. So, yeah, it's analytics.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely analytics. Look at it this way. It's not that anybody who ever plays any of the major sports desires that one day they will be in the Hall of Fame. But if you play well enough to earn a spot in the Hall of Fame, and somebody, through no reason that you can think of, stops your progress, then you're pushing the buttons on what Terrell Owens was talking about, that there is a climate of guys who don't know fuck all about their sport, who don't care fuck all about their sport, but they like the fact that they can have a bully pulpit and wield some perceived power in stopping people. You know, if Drew Pearson had not gotten in, and thank you guys for telling me because I really thought he wasn't in, but if he had not gotten in, how much of a fucking disservice would that be? You know, there are players who soldier on, and even worse, the linemen, because the linemen don't get a fair hit. They don't get a fair shake. There's only, like, what, two guards in the whole fucking Hall of Fame? That's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, Kramer and Hammer from New England? That's bullshit.
Yeah. Larry Little said that, and Larry Little should go moonwalks back to what Tripp was saying. He said there's three more players in black college football on there, but he said I don't make that call.
One thing, I don't know if it will stop all the ridiculousness, but I think it will. I think you would get a, because to me, every living Hall of Famer should get a vote.
Every living Hall of Famer should get a vote.
Because I'm going to listen to a guy who's done the thing other than some writer with penis envy. And a lot of it is what fuels it. Now again, they may have their own prejudices and whatever, but you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to listen to a guy who played the game as opposed to a guy who's tried to play the game in his mind.
You don't think that Reggie White would vote Eric Williams into the Hall of Fame? And when they ask him why, he'll say, "Cause that motherfucker played me head up." Shit, are you kidding me?
Yep. Tony, you put that was on the money. There's a guy that I ran years ago in the press box. As a matter of fact, the guy's name. He played with New England a long time ago, right before Tom Brady got. I got the brother's name. Good job. Anyway, look, I'm also short.
What position did he play?
Defensive back. But anyway, he was on a show with Stephen A. Smith when Stephen A. Smith had his radio show in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about NFL ball players. And basically he said the same thing I said about Tom Brady. He said Tom Brady is an outstanding football player. But to call him the best quarterback of all times, he says when he's playing in the 2000s, if he played in the 90s and the 80s, do you think he'd be the same kind of quarterback?
Absolutely not. I'm guessing that's Michael Haynes.
No, forgot the guy's name. He wasn't a star.
Was it Tim Fox?
I don't know. No, it was a brother. He's doing something at the time. He was doing something on Sirius Radio.
How about Ronnie Lippitt?
It could have been.
During that time when Tippett was there, they had a brother who was a starting defensive back. His name was Ronnie Lippitt. He was from Iowa. But that's the thing. Because see, I will concede the era in a sense with Brady. His era, I give it to him. I'll give it.
That's what I say. The greatest of all time in his era.
But all time, look. I'm just put this way. I'm throwing Unitas. I'm throwing Otto Graham. Montana. I'm throwing in Bradshaw. Though I'm gonna throw at least maybe two more of the names before I throw Brady's name into it.
Mm-hmm.
If Brady had played quarterback in the '70s, they'd have beat on him like a runaway slave.
It's like the Jerry Rice argument. Jerry Rice is tremendous, but and again, we'll never live to see it. Unfortunately, just once, I would have loved to have seen Jerry go into the old Oakland Alameda College.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
Mr. Rice, let me introduce you to Mr. Atkinson. Mr. Rice, let me introduce you to Mr. Tatum.
And Mr. Willie Brown. Don't forget Willie Brown.
And let me introduce you to their cousin, Mr. Dr. Death.
And
Tim Hendricks coming across the middle with a clothesline.
And Jack never smiled. And I ain't got nothing against Jerry. But like I said before, we got fools. Let me repeat that. Fools running out talking about Jerry Rice, the greatest football player in the NFL. Get off that.
No, no history.
Yeah. I'll concede you top five.
I guess he used to start in the '70s, huh?
No, I'll concede. You know what? I'll concede you maybe top five, but all time. I can't.
I got. I tell you, Exhibit One. Sammy White.
Oh.
You mean Sammy White's head?
Because, believe me, I knew Jack. Jack, like I told George Atkinson, said, let him come in the middle. He ain't playing the rest of the game. That's me talking.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know.
Come on,
Jack.
Put it this way. I don't want to say he's a hard hitter, but Sammy White is still roaming the streets of Pasadena as we speak. I'll just say that.
And Ronnie is right behind him with half his finger cut off, saying, "I got your back."
Hold up, y'all.
Cincinnati Bengals still the guy hit and don't want to get hit no more. Iggy said, "Damn, that nigga hit me."
Everybody saw
Any Given Sunday, right?
Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In the scene where they're playing, somebody loses an eye. Now, I'm sorry, I ain't never seen anybody lose a fucking eye and have it there on the ground. Can somebody help a brother out with two eyes?
The only thing I can think of when I see that is "Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte." That's about the closest thing that I can think of with that. But not on the football field.
No.
Daryl Steeney got hit in the back and shattered his spine. That's about close as losing an eye.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, you wouldn't see no eyes out there because you got me out here trying to tackle a 200-pound defensive back. I'm high in pain.
That's right. But you're right, Mike. That's this notion of putting people on a pedestal to where they're godlike. Come on. Come on, man.
Exactly.
Stop.
And for the record,
even NFL films in their most loudest hyperbole wouldn't do that. You know?
Fucking that was unnecessary. They're gonna have any kind of injury. Why are you gonna give me somebody's iPhone out? That was bullshit.
It's called artistic license, Mike.
Yeah.
It's still called bullshit where I come
apparently
from.
Yeah, apparently Mike apparently he couldn't get that JFK image out of his head when he was doing the movie, apparently.
Yeah,
went back and to the left. Yes,
mm-hmm. My brain's all over the back seat.
For the record, I love Betty Davis, and I got to give her some gangsta when she served that motherfucking rat to Olivia De Havilland.
Medium rare, by the way.
Medium rare. All right, that brings us to final thoughts, everybody. I appreciate everybody coming in again, throwing some good shit in the pot. We are 1,340 plus shows in. And, of course, the big tournament is coming up tomorrow on the sports team, but DJ Gray and I have a tournament that's already in view and will be in the mix as the basketball tournament begins. But to that, I'm going to go to Reggie first. Reggie, thank you for bringing brother on. He was a great guest. Put something in the pot for
us. Thank you. Thank you so much for having Coach Michael Bailey on. But I normally I don't talk about shows like this, but Miss Osborne was on Entertainment Today with Mr. Frazier. Isn't it interesting that a racist had to go get a Negro to try to plead her case? And Miss Osborne had the audacity to say, "Why are you crying? I should be crying." No, bitch, you one that hanging with a racist. And then the interesting when the racist, just like a certain person on a high school basketball radio station, blamed it on fucking insulin. My sugar was high. Oh, now racism is causing a sugar being high. Unbelievable. These white folks got more bullshit with them than the damn Barnum and Bailey. I'm done.
And for the record, the niggas won. They not only won the game, they won the whole tournament. So fuck
Mike,
you.
And the brother coaching, too. They had a brother coaching.
Even Meghan Markle didn't go out and call somebody a nigga after they put some sugar in her grits. So come on.
There you go. Oh, the Rich. They've infected brown grits.
Wait, Rich. The Rich.
Yes, sir.
The Rich.
Yes, sir.
You know something?
Yes, sir.
My synopsis of the situation that you just talked about can be summed up like this. She talked to the white woman, but at the wrong time. Because I know about Cheryl Underwood, had that been off screen in the streets?
Oh, she'd have worked her ass.
Mm-hmm.
She
done
went
back. She and Zeta too, a member of the Divine Nine.
Patrick, two words.
Mm-hmm.
That's Vaseline and earrings. Vaseline and earrings.
It was just
that's,
like
that's
that.
All
and a razor blade. And a razor blade.
It starts off with Vaseline and earrings. And anything else after that is whatever.
Don't forget the high top tennis shoes now. Don't forget that.
No,
that's not the bubble zinc with it.
Reg, you know what's messed up. Yep. What she called a Pete?
Yeah.
Her family is. Oh, you at your mind? And she's lucky. She's lucky that she go. Like I said, she got the right woman, but at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm. All I said, right. All them drugs the Osmonds were doing, her ass must have been having some coke because she lost her damn fucking mouth.
No lie.
But the real racist came out. Her and her little boyfriend over in England. Both of them.
Throw
something in the pot, Patrick.
Real quick, you guys. One of my favorite times of the year, seeing the tournament. And from the HBU's perspective, I'm glad to see it's one of the few times that network television, even though they saw them at the bottom, hopefully they get to the top, some exposure to some HBU schools in basketball. I think there are some teams that I've seen this year
that been doing pretty well, but it gets them some exposure. It gets some money into the schools, and I'm always happy to see this time of year that I can see some schools. I don't know how far to go, but at least they're being seen by some people more than they would see before. That's all.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Thank you. Fred, come on in and throw something in the pot.
I got a quick question for Reggie. Which Mike Billy was that?
Was it Mike Billy that was FN director, the one that fired his cousin?
Okay. Okay, that's what I thought.
I thought you were asking some questions about the CIAA tomb and everything. I was surprised, Professor.
No, no. He's not associated with that. I thought that's who that was.
Yeah, that was former athletic director.
Your homeboy. But anyway.
He spoke like a true Ram.
but anyhow, you know, right down here now, we're sitting here waiting on a storm here, and I was watching the news a little bit ago, and there was a lot of places that got torn up down south in Mississippi, Alabama.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Havoc in there, so, you know, to keep them people in prayer. But the other thing
yes,
is,
indeed.
As we begin closing out this year with the major sports and trying to work football in, I've watched some of the football. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. Some of these guys is foolish. But, you know, and this exposure for HBCUs is great. But then the other side of it has to be, where do we go from here? Because somewhere around July 15th, the Mouse 1, 2, and 15, along with CBS, who was already locked up by the SEC, NBC by Notre Dame. I'm not sure if ABC still carries football or not.
NBC, yeah.
Yeah, they're in that ESPN package, basically.
Again, where do we go from here? Because there are things we got to do better, but then we also got to – part of that has to do with holding these people's feet to the fire. I love what the SWAC is doing, and it's setting the bar high for themselves. But it's also going to open the doors for the MEAC as well as the Division II schools. And you know, as we always say, we got to tell our own story. I hope we don't get sprung out there too far, because I was asked why didn't I include Dion in the book. Well, Deion didn't coach anybody. Realistically, he's only coached one real game, because Mississippi Valley is in rebuild mode. The first school they played was nothing but a glorified scrimmage. Beating Grambling, I'll give him that one. But you know, let's be real about this. Come the fall, when they can fire up them cookers down south, when he goes down to the swamp called Miami, to play Florida A&M, and he had nerve to make a basically discouraging comment on behalf of the boom against the 100, you don't do that and go to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I know he think he got it in because he went to school across the track, but that was across the track. And he gonna find out that Sam gonna have a big can of whoop ass waiting on him, and so by that time, we're talking about everybody should be vaccinated. Everybody,
Professor, are you implying that Coach Prime is going to get snake bit?
No. He might as well been over.
Rather.
I mean, right now, because think about it. He has an open window now because there is no big time football. That was all taken care of basically for Christmas, and then Alabama won there. They could care less about this.
Mm-hmm.
But now, what's he going to put on the field? And like more than one coach then said, hey, we recruiting to beat whoever Jackson State put on the field. We could care less about Coach Prime. And with that in mind, Coach Prime, I mean, I wish him well. But because somebody actually suggested that, you know, he play Winston-Salem State. We don't need him. I mean, what good is it going to do us? Because it's going to be all about him. And too much of that right now is all about him.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the religious part of this. You know, we have finally gotten PayPal in gear, and everything is set. So anybody you know, you need books about Livingstone, about Claflin, about history of Black College football, it's on this website, www.blackheritagereview.com. Buy books in multiples of ones, twos, threes, fours, and fives, and I won't be greedy.
Fred, I'm going to need to contact you. Seriously, I need to pick up two copies.
Okay.
Yes, indeed. Buy books, buy books, buy books. Reading is fundamental.
Oh, Fred, I need to pick up a copy and another copy of the one that you had on a black player that should be in the NFL Hall of Fame. Yeah, so
okay. We don't have any of those. We're working on getting them printed.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I that's free right there. I'll get back with you.
All right.
Okay. What money? No, don't worry about the money. It'll be there.
G, just send me $100 a piece. That'd be good.
Okay. All right. Yeah. This morning. Atlanta, Georgia. There's one fool trying to go into a massage parlor. He shoots people in a massage parlor. This is the legacy of white supremacy and misogyny. Yesterday's event is going to happen again and again. Racist, xenophobic, misogynist politicians and the current political movement has thrived the last 5 years. Donald J. Trump has put this program. So this guy with a gun shoots down CeCe McBean. Not because they're black, not because they're white, but because they're Asian. This has got to stop. The xenophobic slurs. I live in the Bay Area, which is 40% Asian. You gotta stop this. Better we go 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock in the East, and the Big Bang tournament on Sunday night. I think we're gonna have a rematch. We have a rematch here between Usher and Kenny Williams.
And Mr. Williams. Oh, shit.
And the ladies are crying.
God have mercy. Tony, come on with the pot.
Mm-hmm. If somebody should ever be so stupid as to do an Anthony McLean movie. Yeah, I know. Yeah, sure. If I had to say so, I would like to have Mr. Yapit Koto play me.
Yeah,
the movie.
All right. Yeah, Scott. Yeah.
Now he would have had to
cut. He would have had to cut some of his hair off, or just a little. And and unfortunately, he would probably have to put on a few pounds as well. But man, it's like every other day, man, we're losing folks, and it's like
I know it's bad.
Yeah,
it's rough, man. Whenever I hear like a breaking news thing, I'm like, oh no,
not again, not again.
Oh man, you're right about
Yasukoto, brother. Actually, across 110th Street, they shot part of that Maui neighborhood.
Yes,
and he was the first black guy to kill a white guy in a movie.
Fred, I mean, Tony, can I close up, man? There was a movie. I was in Ohio at the time. There was a movie being shot in Columbus, and my ex-wife, who was a news anchor, was doing a story on the movie, and we got invited to the premiere when the movie came out. As a matter of fact, one of the lead actors needed a haircut, so a friend of mine's. When my now wife girlfriend was a hairdresser in one of the most prestigious places in Columbus, and she was black, and we got the person needed a haircut, but they couldn't come to the facility; they had to go to the facility. So I went with her and another young lady to get the guy's haircut. Make a long story short, the picture was called Brubaker with Robert Redford showing Yasukoto.
Yeah,
and I was around me and my ex-wife was at the opening, and we got Yapata, a lady that would be his guest that his girlfriend that day would be just his guest that day walking the red carpet, and to show how some people get crazy at these movie premieres, some sister jumped out and says why is she with him, and the child was fine, but they didn't realize the ghetto the woman has them, and she went, who are you talking about? But make a long story short, I knew Yoffert. He's a nice brother, real good brother, man. I'm sorry to see him go.
Yeah, me too. His actual role as Giordano on Homicide was excellent. You know, the fact that show stayed on as long as it did was because of him and all those great actors on it. But yeah, Yoffert, the brother, will be missed. And that leads me to talk about the other brother who left a few days ago, but he gave us the best 3 minutes of boxing my eyes have ever seen.
Yeah.
New Jersey.
May he rest in peace. I say to the brother, the fights with Leonard and Hearns were capital C classics, but that first round, I mean, we wonder could have seen what was going on in that fight. That's how hard they went at each other, and the descriptions really were bad. I mean, they're whipping the shit out of you. It's like those cartoon fights where you see everybody just see hands and here and head popping there, and Sugar is in the back saying, "They're gonna be rested, or they're gonna need rest after this round." I'm like, he's just throwing in his chest as they're beating the shit out of each other. It looked like if one of them had not been as quick, the fight would have been over within the first 2 minutes. We have never seen that kind of action since. And in the lower classes, the closest thing that comes to them is Arturo Daddy and the other kid, York, I think his name is. But Hagler Hearns, if one round can identify a whole career for those two, it would be that. We miss you, Marvelous. Thank you for sharing your gifts with us. Said the day is on the other side, brother. And now, if you do that, we will be back with the Big Bang Tournament. And, of course, now the other tournament will be in effect. We see how much bullshit they struggle. We're hoping for the ACCU to pull off the ass whipping and maybe get a couple of bucks, because we know it'll be the only bucks they'll really get. So the NCAA will be trying to strangle them for every dollar. So having said that, for the panel, for myself, everybody, please go safe, stay safe, be safe. Once you get from A to B and back to A-OK, wash your hands, wash your ass, wear masks, sneeze, watch your back.
for my spirit to survive. How I lost the will to be, cause my soul simply crept outside of me. Somebody tell me where to go.